As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Pucks in 7 with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
You know, every time Victoria and I get together and do this podcast, a lot of times I've said, okay, boy, so many great storylines that happened the week before. And yes, there has been. I'm not going to say it this time, but I'll say this, that we are inching closer to where most of the teams, if not all of them, will be at the 41-game mark. So that's halfway through the 82-game season. Buffalo, a few games to make up. But the point is, when is it halfway? Is it halfway when they all play 41 games? Maybe. And the point is, too, that everything is turning into must-see TV, must-see radio, must-see everything when it comes to the NHL. It's a great season so far into 2023. Can't wait till April and then, of course, into the postseason. It is Pucks in 7, Ryan Payne, Victoria Matiash. Follow us on Twitter at RyanPayne75, at Victoria Matiash. Vic, of course, does great work, ESPN.com, NHL Fantasy. We dive into that later on in this show. And also does work for a major talk news station in Toronto. She's always busy. Always appreciate the time, by the way, Victoria.
That you this is my pleasure, man. This is my fun couple of hours of the week. This is my favorite.
Because sometimes you've come on and just, okay, where am I? Who are you? And what are we doing? Hey, we're good. It's all good. Anyway, I do work for Sirius XM, NHL Network Radio, Channel 91, a hot stove, host the show on the weekend. So that is a lot of fun. Okay, coming up, we do as we always do. We'll look back to the week that was. Look ahead to the week to come, talk about Vic's Fantasy 7 later on in the podcast, and we bring back, Vic, drop the clink hammer. So no Lonnie Bohon no's or Bohon yes.
I got a lot of feedback this past week,
okay.
By the way.
Okay,
I've got the most feedback since we started doing this, and okay. It was very split. Some people loved Bohon no's, Bohon yes.
Right.
Some people were lesser fans, but okay. Appreciated what we were doing with
the
it
effort.
And
right.
The creativity that accompanied it. And then there was a segment of the population, I'm talking like this is hundreds of people, it's literally like 7, but there's a segment of our listening population that loves the clink hammer and wanted us to bring it back and actually wanted reassurance that we were going to drop the clink hammer once again this week.
Okay.
So I made my promises, and of course we are. That's sort of more of a staple. We're going to drop the clink hammer more often than not. Other segments will just kind of make guest appearances.
So it makes sense then when people with the Bohon yes and Bohon no's segment, and it's always funny to say, there's a yes and a no with that, right? It makes perfect sense that people are split. Anyway, we're going to bring back the clink hammer, and we're going to drop it, bring it back, all that stuff. So stay tuned for that. That's coming up in just a bit. Okay, Boston Bruins. I have, and I think I said this to you last week, I have no trouble with talking about this team every time we sit down to do this podcast, because we could spend the whole entire podcast on the season that they're having, the numbers the players are putting up, the numbers Omar is putting up in goal, the all-star season the entire team is putting together. It's incredible. And they can't lose for the most part. They haven't lost very much at all. And now David Pastrnak is doing what David Pastrnak does. He's scoring. 7 goals in 3 games. Mm-hmm. This team's unstoppable.
Including a hat trick.
And we talk about sustainability. Of course, the record is not going to be as intense by the time the 82nd game is played. But I'll tell you this. The way they're playing, the 65-win season, which was set by Detroit 95-96, then Tampa, I think 18-19, that to me is in jeopardy.
They already have 68 points, which is quite incredible. they already have more points than Chicago and Anaheim and San Jose might have by the end of the season. I think that's a safe enough bet. The fact that they've only lost four times in regulation, and we're in January. We are halfway through the season. I believe they played 40 games. So we're halfway through the Boston Bruins season, and they have lost four times in regulation this year, and they haven't lost once in regulation at home.
It's unfathomable.
Isn't it wild?
Yeah, it is.
Jim Montgomery, coach of the year? I think so.
It's funny you mention that, and I'm glad you did, because anytime a new... First of all, Bruce Cassidy didn't do a bad job with Boston. Boston's been pretty good for a few years. Cassidy did well. His numbers were very good. Montgomery comes in, who is beloved by, from what I gather, to a man, everybody, most of them, in the National Hockey League when it comes to players. And he comes in, he puts his stamp on the team. But the way that Boston's responded... I'm not saying Jim Montgomery is the main reason why the team's playing this well. They're a good team. They're a solid team. But the way I think they've responded and how they didn't respond to Cassidy... We know what happened at the end of last season when he was let go and there was some rumblings in the room that the players weren't on the same page. But yeah, I'd have to say...
Oh, David Krejci came back and signed with this team because of the coaching change. I think we can say that out loud.
Slam dunk with that. Yeah, so Cassidy gone, other guys come back. So yes, I would say what Jim Montgomery has done in year one, especially to what Montgomery's gone through, right, in the last few years as well.
We're all rooting for that guy.
He's a great, he's a fantastic human.
I will say what I think that he has done that maybe has been a little bit different from what other coaches are doing around the league. He is managing that goaltending tandem. And I know it's not really a tandem. Linus Ullmark is probably the number one, but Jeremy Swayman still plays a fair bit.
Right.
And the fact that he's managing that tandem with the two of them having the time of their lives, there's no resentment.
They're not jealous.
Of course, they're not jealous of each other at all. You looked at Linus Ullmark's face in the post interview after the Winter Classic last Monday, which was a lot of fun.
Yes.
And he's talking about how he's having the time of his life. He's never enjoyed himself this much playing hockey. And he's sharing that crease to a degree with Jeremy Swayman.
Yeah.
And it's smooth as silk, man. And I think Montgomery deserves a lot of credit for that.
Always thought about coaches, and I look at John Cooper in Tampa as the coach, which it'll make sense with what I'm saying. You can be any type of coach on a really good hockey team. Tampa's been a really good hockey team. Boston's a really good hockey team. But to be a really good coach, you have to manage the egos. You have to manage the system, all these all-stars. Manage the winning. Keep them grounded. Keep them here. Don't let them get too ahead of themselves. That's where I think these coaches get a lot of their money, and they make a lot of their money. Speaking of that, Pastrnak, very quickly, up for a contract. From what I gather, a couple weeks back, there was still discussions going on. J.P. Barrie, the agent, and Don Sweeney company with Boston, but they remain apart. I'm telling you, Vic, if he continues to do what he's doing, is he going to top McKinnon? Is he going to top McKinnon in an AAV? At 12.6?
That's a really, really, really tough question. I don't know how you top McKinnon because he brings other things to the game. But if he finishes with 60 goals this season and he's on pace for that, I don't know how he doesn't get paid large. Now, Pastrnak has a little bit of a reputation for, I believe he might take a very small or offer a very small hometown discount.
Yes.
Because he really likes playing in Boston. He doesn't sound like one of the greediest individuals out there, but he also is going to get what is his. So I don't know what the number is. I don't think it's quite McKinnon. I think it's probably close. But again, if he scores 60, Ryan, how do you not pay him?
And he's going to have the ball in his court. He's going to say, okay, this is what I'm doing. I'm in a pretty good age. I'm on a good team.
He's in his prime. And he's got lots of great years ahead of him. He's still a young man. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I don't know, but they need to manage the cap system there, and he's going to recognize that, and his agent is going to recognize that. So I think the situation is going to need to be massaged.
McKinnon, McDavid in the 12s, Panarin, Matthews, Carlson, Tavares, etc., down to Doughty, Marner, just below the 11. So he will absolutely, I believe, get
11
to at least the 11.
He's getting 11
for sure. Yeah, he's getting 11 for sure. Lucky guy. He's second, as we do this podcast, he's second in goal scoring behind McDavid, thanks to the hat trick. He's 32, McDavid is 33. Tage Thompson, again, I've been yapping about him for a long time on this during this season because he deserves it. He is, to me, one of, if not the most smooth, big men in the game today. The hands are ridiculous.
You forget how big he is.
He's huge.
I was watching the Sabres the other day quite closely, like paying attention by period, which I'm not always able to do because there's so much hockey on. And he comes into frame, and his frame He's 6'7". He's huge. Yes. It's just, it always jars me a little bit. And I've watched him play a ton, but still, he always catches me by surprise. And the fact that he's also graceful, like you mentioned, and he can still move really well, that is quite a combination. Talk about a team-friendly contract.
You think?
They signed him to. Now they have him. He's probably kicking himself a little bit. Well, I wasn't expecting to score 31 goals in 37 games to start this season.
I don't think anybody was, Stage. Anybody was. But he's I've been rooting for Buffalo, and too, not to bring this up, but it should be brought up because of the awful moment that we saw back on Monday in the NFL, Buffalo and Cincy, and then Tage, you know, everyone rallies around Hamlin, the Buffalo player that went
DeMar
down,
Hamlin, of course, number three, who suffered like a cardiac event,
right.
And at the time of this podcast, we should mention we're now hearing is going to be released from hospital this week.
Great
fingers
news.
Crossed that that's how it all works out, because that was one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And the fact that this young 24-year-old man is recovering, I know this is a tangent, but it is important.
Right.
It's fingers crossed remain for this guy, and just hopefully he can enjoy a long and healthy life, whether football's a part of that or not. I don't care.
Yeah. And everybody rallied around him. The Sabres, the Bills, the NFL, everybody rallied around him, which was great. By the way, the Tage Thompson contract, a 3-year deal, $4.2 million. And he expired. The contract's done after this season, $1.4 million. So you know that's going to increase a little bit, I think.
Right.
Isn't that funny? A contract year, someone playing well. With all due respect, Tage, you're pretty good. The Capitals, I think, Vic, are right in the really good spot, in the best spot, I believe, for them to be in, because they didn't have Backstrom. They didn't have Wilson. But guess what? Now they have Backstrom. Now they have Wilson. Ovi's still scoring. I think they're in a great spot right now. And who's to say that this team can't go on an even bigger run than they have already? Good on them for where they're at right now.
I mean, they're third in their division. They're 7-1-2 in their last 10. And that's basically largely without, obviously, Backstrom and Wilson, who just made their season debuts over the weekend simultaneously, which I thought was a little interesting. Maybe you might want to ease somebody in and then ease the other in. And right now, that top six looks like the top six we're used to seeing in Washington. You've got Kuznetsov next to Wilson on the second scoring line. You got Backstrom, who's now centering his good pal Ovi again. And look out for the Capitals in the Metropolitan, because with those two pieces back there, and then, okay, let's say they get into the playoffs, and they're certainly moving in that direction. And now you're going to get John Carlson back, hopefully, in the postseason. You've got Darcy Kemper playing, you know, really well in net right now. Not everybody's a huge Kemper fan, but you can't argue with the way that he's performed recently.
No.
I mean, he just had a shutout over the weekend. It's flawless.
Yeah.
So look out for Washington.
Washington, it for me is a team. It's a veteran team, and one of his shutouts too over the weekend. Washington blocked 25 shots from 13 different players in front of the net. So
that's a good team effort.
To me, speaks volumes. By the way, I said Tage Thompson is up for a contract. No, he's not up for a contract. 7.142 signed through 2930. That still is a very friendly contract.
That was the one that I was referencing. Right. Because they have him. He probably could have signed something next year.
Yeah.
We're talking 9-10.
Yeah.
And he's signed for 7. But hey, you roll the dice. You don't. The Sabres won that deal.
They did. And the 1.4 ends this year. That's why I'm confused.
Right.
And then the 7 point, whatever it is, and change starts next year. Good on you, Tage. Well done.
It's good still on plenty of money, by the way. It's still lots of money.
Yeah, it is. Oh, it is.
Look at my bank account, and then we'll compare.
So, 1.4. Yes, please. Even an eighth, whatever, of that would be fantastic. The Kraken are scoring. You want to joke? You want to say, oh, they're not that cracked up to be on home ice, but they certainly are doing well away from home.
Do you have the numbers in front of you? I don't. But I know they've been scoring. They scored 8 the other day, and then there was 5 and another win. And
there was
winning.
There was a couple of fives. There was 5 back-to-back, and then they scored 8. So that's 18 in 3. And then as we're doing this podcast, they're in Montreal. They're on a lengthy road trip, too. They're in Montreal. So who's to
they've
say
won
they
4
can't,
straight.
Who's to say they can't put up at least 5? Okay.
So, I mean, the way that Montreal's defense is playing right now, they can easily score another 5-6. And that's unfortunate for Habs fans. I'm sorry, but it's just your defense is not, even with David Savard back, it's not what it needs to be. I think everybody realizes that. Martin St. Louis is so sad right now. They won one game over the weekend, and that's good, but it's not looking great for Montreal. And yeah, I think Seattle can do some serious damage.
They're a balanced team with what they have. They don't have a bunch of guys that have double digits in goals, but they have about 17 players in double digits in points. And what they're doing lately on the, it's a great story. They only won 11 games on the road last season. They only won 11. And I believe that this season they are at 12-4-2. So they've already eclipsed the amount of total road wins that they had just one season ago. A lot of different players making headlines in reaching milestones in Toronto, Vic, a couple, Matthews and Marner, a couple of 500s for them this past week, right?
It was neat that it was also neat to see them do it at the same time. Like,
yeah,
not during
nice.
The same
yeah.
game,
yeah.
but just during the same week. And I like the fact they didn't do it during the same game. So each of them got their moment for their 500.
Right.
But the fact that those two have been such a big part of what the Leafs are doing and what the Leafs are building, they've been two of the, I mean, it's an obvious statement. They're two of the cornerstones of this franchise right now. And the Leafs' playoff success or lack thereof will rest on players like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner for years to come. So the fact that they actually got to share that honor during the same week was interesting. And Matthews, 500 points in 448 games. Well, he has over, I think he's at five something now in 448 games. Mitch Marner, 504 now, I believe, in 468 games. So it took Mitch a little extra to get to the 500. But honestly, we're splitting hairs here. Those are two superstars, and the Maple Leafs are very lucky to have them.
He's having a massive season, Mitch Marner is,
thanks
to that huge point streak that he went on as well, right? The assists and the goals just pile up. If he didn't have that streak, he probably wouldn't be at 500 right now. Obviously, he wouldn't be if he went, 20-plus games, whatever it was, with at least
a real rallying cry for that team, too, remember? They started off the season a little stumbling.
Right.
And then I think everybody got behind Mitch when he eventually got to 23. And I think that was just great for everybody involved in that organization. They started having fun again. There was a purpose to not only winning hockey games to move up the standings, but to help Mitch Marner. He's getting fed the puck. They're trying harder. I think a little bit, even if it's subconscious, just because it was a fun thing. And in Toronto, the media is so harsh.
No, it's not.
And the media...
What?
They're so mean.
Yes.
They can be. And there's just so much focus on that team in Toronto. It's such a crazy hockey team. I know the Raptors are great and the Jays are important too, but Toronto's just next level when it comes to media attention.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't have anything to gripe about for about a month because not only were the Leafs winning, but you had Marner's point streak. It was just a lot of fun.
It's incredible, too, to look at the standings as we hit the break, and you have the Canes and Leafs with 57 points. I'm talking about the entire league. Vegas, 56. Dallas, 54. Those are in the top five. Then Boston, 68. So Toronto's having one heck of a season, but they're still 11 points back of the Boston Bruins in both.
Well, they've
Toronto's
lost seven in regulation. Shame, shame, Toronto Leafs. Toronto Maple Leafs. They've lost seven because Boston's only lost four.
You want to talk about that again?
Right.
Let's talk about the overtime points. No, we're not going to talk about the overtime points.
I don't want to get into
not
that.
This we'll
save
week.
That for a later date again.
We will.
Loser points.
Okay, we'll come back. After this, we'll talk UC Soros. Vic wants to address this past Wednesday. Light night, but odd night.
It was a
Shane
really
Wright,
strange evening.
Yeah, very strange. Shane Wright, too, the junior, is back, of course, to the OHL, Patrick Kane, much more. Clint Hammer's coming up in a bit. Vic's Fantasy 7 a week to come as well. Pucks and 7, Ryan Payton, Victoria Manage. We'll be back.
Welcome back to Pucks and 7 with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
That is Ryan Payton, and I am Victoria Matiash, and this definitely is Pucks and 7, where we look at the where and when. We look at the week that was, everything nifty that happened in the last 7 days, and then we also, of course, look ahead to the 7 days to come and trends we're watching, what's going on, everything else in the NHL. For instance, this past week, Ryan, how about that UC Saros?
Okay, we've been chatting, I specifically, in the beginning of the season, probably for the first month. Not that he's a big part of my fantasy team, but that's a topic for another day. Anyway, I'm pulling for him for a whole bunch of different reasons. Again, not the least of which is fantasy. But I've been saying Nashville, the entire team. But Saros, he has to be kind of once or twice every couple weeks, steal a game. Show us the goalie that everybody knows that you are. So he is actually, I think things are turning around. The last three games that he started, he's won. And the spectacular one was the 64 save performance in, again, 67 shots against Carolina, who, as everybody knows, is a very good hockey. I know. You know what's odd? Sometimes in hockey, you get that. A lot of times you think, okay, you're gonna see a team maybe that isn't so good, but they just fire the puck at the net and they put 45, 50 shots. But the Carolina Hurricanes
have been dominating.
And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he made a lot of high danger saves in that zone. And I've always said this about any goalie. 64 save, 50 save, 45, 40 saves. Great. But how many of them are actual ones that are in great
shape? Oh, you're just taking it right in the chest.
Yeah, right.
Like you don't even need to move.
You don't have to move. So if you make if you have 50 saves a night, oh, look at that. Great. But 47 of them were pretty, you know, simple, I guess. And then three aren't. But Saros was dynamite. And I'm hoping
that
he's a
littler guy, too. He's one of the smallest goaltenders in the NHL, if not the smallest goaltender. And I didn't get to see that game in its entirety, but I did watch highlights. And the way that he was managing the crease, the way that he was moving, he looked extremely confident. And he is going to be a big key to the success that the Predators do or do not enjoy this year. And right now, hey, Ryan, they've won three straight. They look a lot better. Ryan McDonagh is starting to fit in there more like we expected.
We've been telling them. We've been saying to them, let's go. I know they listen, and they're finally listening to us. But to me, they're too good of a team, and there's a bunch of teams. But they're too good of a team to not...
They're a playoff team.
Yeah,
they're
to built, not be there.
They're built to be in the postseason. Right now, they're in sixth, so they still have some work to do. But I'm telling you, they can overtake St. Louis. I don't think there's much of an issue there. And then the big fight. The big fight is going to be between Colorado, Minnesota, Winnipeg, and Dallas. And maybe five go, but if only four go, it's going to be tough.
You mentioned the Blues just very quickly on that. Then I have a nugget on Saros. But Doug Armstrong and Craig Berube, during the break, coming back from the break, they made it quite clear via text messages and messages to every member of the team, basically to say, wake up and figure this thing out. And you and I talked about this, I think, the last time we did it, about the Ryan O'Reilly situation, the Vlade Tarasenko situation.
They're out for several weeks.
Yep. But the more the days go by, the we get closer to that deadline, right? So this next month or two, whatever it is before the deadline, it's going to be huge for St. Louis. Quick nugget, and I've been dying to say this guy's name. So, Saros stopping 64 of 67 shots. Mario Lessard, I'm not going to date ourselves here, but I remember him. He made 65 saves during a game in 81. And one of the greatest names in the history of hockey, one of the greatest goaltending names in the history of hockey, in fact, one of the greatest names in sports history, he turned aside 70 shots in 1991, the one and only Ron Tugnutt.
Oh, right.
Yep.
Right.
Ron.
You guys love that guy.
We sure do. Come on. Hey, Ronnie?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Speaking of goalies, I can't really go on right now. Speaking of goalies, Wednesday, said this off the top of the podcast. You want to look at Wednesday. Not a lot of games, only three, but very odd.
That was one of the strangest evenings of hockey I have taken in a long time. And I was able to watch all three of the games because, again, there were only three and they were staggered to a certain degree as well. So first you had New Jersey beat Detroit. That was fine. No real, you know, drama or anything bizarre happened there. Actually, it was neat. That was a nice game to watch. I know this is tangential again, but New Jersey kind of needs to get back on their horse. And they really looked like they did earlier this season when they were dominating, when they beat Detroit 5-1 in that. Mm-hmm. They actually had multi-point games from the 4-H club. Holtz, Hughes, Hamilton, and Heischer.
I like
all
it.
Start with the letter H. They
I
all
like
had multi-point games in that
I
one.
Like
and
it.
That was a really good win by New Jersey. Then the evening went a little wackadoodle because you had Tampa Bay playing Minnesota. Vasilevsky is out there in warm-ups. He's ready to go, you think. And then he pulls himself because he feels sick. I mean, Vasilevsky isn't certainly entitled to do that. If he doesn't think he's going to give his no. team the best, maybe it's a bad tummy, maybe it's a bad flu, who knows what it is. But he didn't think he could play the game. So poor Brian Elliott, who played the night before. So not even back-to-back starts for Brian Elliott, but back-to-back starts in back-to-back nights. And I can't even remember the last time Elliott did that. So anyways, he did not have a good evening against Minnesota. Filip Gustavsson is in the other net for Minnesota. He plays an awesome game. He pulls himself at the end of the game because he's sick. So Marc-Andre Fleury has to come in, all padded up, make zero saves because the game was essentially over. But Gustavsson could not last. He got the win. He played spectacularly, but he was sick. And then later on in Anaheim, John Gibson, pitches his first shutout of the season for the very not good Anaheim Ducks.
And you're being nice. You're
being nice
by saying
very not good, not mighty Anaheim Ducks. Uh-huh. And 2-0 actually over the Dallas Stars, one of the best teams in the West, which was completely unexpected. Wednesday was just one of those Twilight Zone evenings. Yeah. It was just a little bit bizarre. And it also, I'm going to ask you right now, why do the Ducks not trade John Gibson? Why?
I don't know what podcast we mentioned this, but I've been a fan of John Gibson. I've said for many years.
Yeah, I've heard you.
Since Anaheim, even how they have not been playing decent in the last, say, few. I've said that he is a very talented goalie. Put him on a more talented team, and number one, people would realize how good he is, and his numbers would be even more.
His numbers are going to be better outside of Anaheim. There's no question.
So he has a lot of, I think he's got a 10-team no trade on his contract.
It does, but it doesn't matter, Ryan.
No,
it doesn't matter. They're going to talk to him anyways. He could absolutely have zero clauses. They're not going to move John Gibson without having a conversation with him about it first.
No,
and he's going to have to rubber stamp it anyway. So the 10-team no trade list doesn't even matter.
I think he is being wasted. He is being wasted in Anaheim at this point. And he's from, I think, Pittsburgh. I think that's where he was born. I'm sure he loves Anaheim. A lot of people do love California. Good on him if it's kind of like a geographical thing as to why he has wanted to stay. I think this kind of situation, the way that Anaheim is trending this season, which is even further down if possible, mirrors the whole Chicago thing as well with Kane and Taze. That when you get to this deadline in March, you got to do something. You have to do something because you're going nowhere. So if I was any member of the Anaheim Ducks management, I would go to John Gibson and say, we're going to wait a little bit. We know you're not going anywhere. If you want to move, if you want to go somewhere, we will try to make that happen and make it as accommodating as we can for you. But we also want to get some things back in return if we're going to try to change this thing around in Anaheim, which will take it, well, from what it seems now, maybe 2, 3, 4 years,
they've got
maybe more.
Trevor Zegras.
Right.
Troy Terry. Mason McTavish. That's who they are building that team around now.
So then based on just that, then Gibson...
They're years away. They are still years away. They're not going to be a contender next year. They're not going to be a contender the year after that. So the point is now you're getting to, we're both in agreement here. They're getting to the end of John Gibson's contract soon. And so by the time that they're going to be good, he's going to be moving on anyways, or he's going to age out or whatever it is, because they're not close yet. They will be good again. They have some really nice young stars there, but they're still, it's not imminent. So you got to move the guy, give him an opportunity to win.
Contract expires in 26-27. He had that 8-year deal, 51.2, so it's 6.4. So again, this goes back to what I was saying to you before. If you continue to go through till, say, March, I think the deadline's 3rd, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, it's March.
It's March 3rd.
So you go through till then. You're paying Gibson, like you're paying Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane. You won't have to, if you need to even, take some of that contract for the rest of the year through April if you want to make a deal with the team. So I think they're doing the right thing. I really hope that he is traded. He deserves to be in a better spot, Vic.
If not this year, maybe in the summer, maybe next year, but at some point in time, because it's just his timeline doesn't line up with theirs. That's all I'm saying.
It doesn't. The Verana drama, that kind of rhymes.
So yeah.
What do you think? You start.
Okay, so... Jacob Vrana was placed on waivers this past week, and that was a surprise to many because Jacob Vrana is a good offensive player for a team that could probably use some offensive prowess. And he's had great success in limited time with Detroit. And he's okay. So in December, he emerged from the player assistance program. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to get into that because that is Jacob Vrana's business. Whatever he had to deal with, he dealt with for a couple of months. Fine. Yeah. Then he was able to go to the AHL because that's allowed. And he stunk the joint out since then. So he hasn't played well in the AHL. Still, for them to place him on waivers, I thought that was very surprising. And then I was further surprised 24 hours later or the next day, what have you, that nobody else picked him up. And I know everybody says, well, where are you going to, you got to jam in a 5.25 per year contract, $1 million somewhere. How are you going to do that? It's only a couple of years. It's not like the guy has a 7-year deal.
Right.
I still think that's manageable money. I thought he was somebody who could help another team because he can score. He's a dynamic scoring forward, and he's still young, so there's a future there. I think he's 26. I'm just surprised how all of this has worked out. I was surprised he was placed on waivers. I was surprised that he survived waivers. And I'm also surprised that he's fumbling as much as he is in the AHL, because he's really not having a good go of it. So it's a bit of a mess.
And, you know, when you mentioned the name, I had forgotten, just because there's so many players and trades and all that type of stuff that are still going and have happened over the years. But he was a decent part of that. He was a part of that trade, Anthony Mantha.
Yep.
Going to the Washington Capitals. Verana, Ponick, first round pick in 21, a second round pick in 2022. So there was enough to give up for Mantha with the Red Wings, et cetera, all that type of stuff. But I'm with you. And you know what? Again, I'm glad you brought up the whole players assistant program. I'm not going to go into it. You aren't either.
No.
I wonder if he's just not still in the right spot. And I wonder if
the thing is, he seems to think he is.
Yeah.
And that's I think that's what's breaking the relationship here. And I don't know how you continue on. You can't leave him in the minors all season. That's not going to work. And I know they can now because he passed through waivers, so they can.
Yeah.
But I just think for the future of the player, all the rest of it, something's going to have to give here. So we're going to see how it all transpires. When that trade first happened, everybody thought that Detroit won that trade because they got, and Mantha hasn't really done much with
Washington. No, he hasn't.
And so it's, again, he's just a disappointing guy to me. I wish he was different, but a good story for another day. It's just, and now you're looking at that trade, you're like, no, now it looks like Washington did win it, because you got this guy who's having some struggles and is now playing in the minors and who nobody else wanted to pick up. So they all know something we don't, maybe, but it's an unfortunate situation in Detroit.
I feel for Shane Wright. And the reason why I feel for Shane Wright is what he has been put through. And again, when I say that, what he has been put through, I don't mean this is bad, what he has been put through. But when you're expected to go, you're given that junior elite status and you're expected to go number one. He didn't go number one, didn't go number two, didn't go number three. He stared down Montreal, even though he denied it. And then he went number four to the Seattle Kraken. And then he gets I think he gets 8 games with the Seattle Kraken. Then he was put on loan to Team Canada. They won the gold, etc. And then he was sent back down to the OHL. And word is, too, by the deadline, I think on Tuesday, that he's going to be traded because the team he's with is not going anywhere.
Okay, so the Frontenac stick. Rebuilding again. So they lost a lot of their great players, Shane Wright included. And so makes absolutely zero sense for him to stick with Kingston when he can play somewhere else. It sounds like it's going to be the London Knights.
It does, yeah.
Which is interesting because the London Knights are already the best team in their conference, in the Western Conference, in the OHL. I feel sorry for Windsor, who's trying desperately to catch them.
Right.
Because now they're going to load up with one of the best players you could possibly get.
Yeah.
I feel differently about this situation now, Ryan, and I'm going to tell you why. So beforehand, I didn't like the management, what the Kraken were doing with Shane Wright. Because again, this is a player who I think needed time. So you either play him and you give him 15 minutes, 14 minutes a game minimum, not this 9, 10 minute stuff on the fourth line, but you play him. You don't sit him in the press box, which they had done game in, game out for quite some time. And I know they said, well, he's practicing with the team and he's learning and all the rest of it. It's not the same thing. I loved it when they were able to send him down to the AHL, and that's when he scored a bunch of goals.
Yep.
He came back and he had more confidence, and that was great. I really hate the rule that if you come from the CHL, you can't play in the minors, even if you're good enough. I think we're both on the same page with that.
Yes, we are.
But you know what? That's the handshake agreement with the CHL and the NHL, and it's not changing anytime soon, so now we got to deal with it. I will say this. I want him to start playing again. I think he had a decent junior tournament. I don't think it was outstanding. I don't think it was nearly as bad as what some people are saying, because they're pointing to his numbers, which weren't outstanding. Shane Wright is not going to put up 80 points in the NHL
No.
ever. He is a two-way player. He's a very responsible forward. He's going to make every team better because of the style of game that he plays. He's very defensively responsible. He's not going to put up the sexiest numbers, and he didn't at the tournament either. But he's also one of the main reasons that Canada won.
Right.
So, to give him full credit, send him to London, let him light it up. Maybe he wins the Memorial Cup. Who knows? Get him playing again, and then we're going to hit the summer and we're going to start again next year. Because right now, the Kraken, we just talked about the Kraken, Ryan, they're winning games, they're scoring goals. They don't have anywhere to put him.
No.
You're not going to take somebody out of the lineup, a legitimate NHLer out of the lineup who's scoring goals right now to fit in Shane Wright to play 11 minutes a game. It doesn't make any sense.
And especially the way Seattle is playing. You're not going to do that. Especially the way Seattle is playing at this point. I'm with you with this. Shane Wright, I thought, excelled and was a star at the junior tournament away from the puck. I thought he was great with the puck, but the things he did away from the puck, the body movement, the different things, the hits, whatever it is, I thought that he excelled in that way. And I'm glad he scored two in that final game. It was good on him to see that. So I'm with you. I think they should just keep him down. Get confidence back in the mind. You're a good player. You know you are. People do as well. But I do think Seattle handled it fine. I did. I think that they gave him a chance, didn't quite work out, and let him season again and revisit, as you said.
And they did it right away after the tournament. They didn't bring him back up to sit him in the press box for a couple of weeks and they pulled the Band-Aid off. We're done. This is what we're doing right now, and I think it's fine.
The Rangers are not looking to trade Alexis Lafreniere.
So they say.
I think this situation, I said this weeks ago on my show, it's not working in New York. It's not the right situation for him. Now, people are probably saying, how do you know? I don't. I'm just saying it. That's just what I think. But I think based on where he's at and the points or lack thereof that he's put up with all the success that he had in junior and all the expectations, I don't want to see him just being kind of in the middle of the pack with that talent that he has. I think he has to go. I don't think he's adding anything to the Rangers. Put it this way, maybe better said like this. I don't think he's taking anything away from the Rangers that somebody else can't add. So I'm not saying you have to go out and make a trade, but somebody else on that team can do better or even just the same as what Lafreniere has been doing.
First overall pick, though, do they give up on him yet? That's my only question. Do you not give it maybe
give
one
up
more
on him
year?
If it's a feeling that you have, give up on him. This whole thing about, oh,
they
you got to stick with him.
They insist that they're not going to. They insist they can still work this out with the guy because there's just, I'm not saying it's the shame, but you pick this guy top overall, first overall. He's supposed to be never expected to be a generational player like we've seen with McDavid and we're going to see with Bedard, but he was supposed to be pretty darn good and he's only been serviceable. You know what I don't like about him? I don't think he's very fast.
No.
When I see him, he doesn't seem to keep up with the faster skaters in the NHL. And for somebody who is as young as he is, this is not an old school player. That's my big concern. So I wonder, he's not going to get faster with another team. So if he's going to be traded somewhere, how do we know he's going to fit in better and he's going to be a better player for them?
So he needs to work on the skating. He needs to work on the speed. I get
that. So if the Rangers are committed to getting him that,
right,
then let's give it the rest of the season. Hey, they're winning. The Rangers are competing and they're winning. And he's not taking it, like you just said, Ryan, he's not taking anything away from
them. No, he's not. So if
you
trade him, it's not going to be a loss.
You hook him up with one of the best skating coaches in the summer.
Sure.
And you see where you are. And next year, maybe you have this discussion again. But you know what? If you're not going to trade him, everybody has to shut up about it. Because this is not fair. It's not fair conversation every day to be asked, oh, are you going to move him or you're not? If the Rangers say we're not moving him this year, then it's a done deal. And then we all need to just clam up.
He's averaging 0.4 points per game.
That's not good enough.
For a number one pick career. I'm sorry. It's not good enough. Last one. Going along on this, but you know what? There's a lot happening in this one. So Patrick Kane, and we mentioned a bit about Patrick Kane and Jonathan Tate. Chicago was awful. So Patrick Kane missed a game. He was injured first time, I think, since 2015. So this guy is kind of like Ovechkin. They've avoided the major injuries. They put up a great amount of numbers, which is great. He said that he could have played, but he didn't want to push it. So this whole thing to me is quite simply, I don't want to push it. I want to stay healthy because I'm going to be gone by the deadline or before the deadline.
I want to get traded. I want to join a contender. And this lingering lower body injury is just a little bit of an issue and I'm not going to push it. So let's just get this done.
Patrick Kane's agent, Victoria Matiash, joining us here. Well, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Right? That's
for
what
sure.
It is.
Do you blame the guy?
No, I don't. I don't blame him at all.
Chicago has four wins or something like that. I know it's a little bit more than that, but not much.
They're not going
anywhere. So why are you going to go out there and play 22 minutes a game when something doesn't feel right, lower body-wise? Heal up, stay at home. I like the Lucas Reichel kid is now getting a chance to actually strut his stuff, which is exactly what Chicago should be doing anyways. So sure, why not? Take it easy. Watch some Housewives or whatever it is, those reality TV.
I think Chicago's turning it around, though. I think they're turning it around. They've won two in a row.
Okay.
One of them was over Arizona.
Yep.
Oh, I'm with you. Kane, smart man. Keep it there. You'll be in a different uniform by the deadline. So we'll look forward to seeing you in
Chicago
the other
10 wins. I'm so sorry.
I know. Come on. Give him credit.
Right.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll drop the clink hammer after this. Ryan Payne, Victoria Matiash, Pucks and Seth.
Welcome back to Pucks and Seven with Ryan Payton and Victoria Matiash.
So when the masses speak, we listen. even if the masses aren't incredibly massive. But we do listen. So as we embark here on dropping the Klinkhammer, which we'll get to in just a second, we'll throw in the Bahan Yes and Bahan No's at some point down the road. But for now, we're back.
And maybe another segment.
The Klinkhammer. That's right.
But we've dropping chatted. The Klinkhammer is going to be a regular feature. So everybody can good. Calm down.
Relax, people. Pucks and Seven, Ryan Payne, Victoria Maniash. Follow us on Twitter at RyanPayne75, at Victoria Maniash. Also available wherever you get your podcasts, Amazon, Google, iHeart. We're also on Apple and the SiriusXM app, Stitcher, Pandora, and as Vic loves to say, just Google us and you will find us. All right, without further ado.
Time now to drop the Klinkhammer.
I know you missed it. You missed it so much. We brought it back. This is in honor of Robert Klinkhammer, who played from 02 to 2022 for a lot of teams. We're talking AMHL, WHL, the NHL, the KHL. In 2013-14, he played for Phoenix, had 20 points in 72 games, Vic, in case you didn't know that. So wanted to throw
very
that
well
out to
very well-traveled. He's seen a lot sure of the was. World, that yeah. Klinkhammer.
He has been. He has been. So what we do in this segment, we constructively criticize players, coaches, general managers, formats.
Ideas
for that. So I'm going to throw this to Vic. Connor Bedard, who, by the way, see what he did in his first game back with Regina? Had 4 goals.
I did
Incredible.
Not.
4 goals. 4 goals for game back.
We throw around, you know, these epic talents, generational players, all the rest of it, but there's no question that Connor Bedard is going to change a team in the NHL. He is a generational talent. He may be one of the most we've ever seen, somebody who's just absolutely above and beyond. Maybe even more so than Connor McDavid, and look at what he's done.
Yep.
So he's something special. There's no question about that. If you watch 5 minutes of the recent World Junior Championships, you would know that. He's going to go first overall later on in early summer, late spring, whenever that is actually falling. The draft is falling. There's no question. Unless a meteor falls on him, he's going first overall.
Right.
So, but what bugs me that we're talking about, okay, he's going to change a team, and he will. And maybe it's Chicago, maybe it's Anaheim, maybe it's Montreal, maybe it's Vancouver. We're not entirely sure. But already, there's all this talk of tanking for Bedard.
Right.
Okay. Here's my issue with this. Is he going to change your team? For sure. Do you want to get the first overall selection so you can pick Connor Bedard? Of course you do. There's only one guy. He is one person. So if you have these 10 teams, 8 teams, 6 teams, 7 teams all trying to tank for Bedard, and they only stand a percentage chance of getting the top pick overall, then this doesn't make any sense to me. It's just from a purely mathematical view. One team is going to get him. Why is everybody tanking? Because it's not like there's 5 Connor Bedards entering the draft. And this is nothing against Adam Fantilli or Leo Carlson or the Michkov kid or any of those other assets, because they're going to make those, they're good prospects, and they're going to make an NHL team wherever they land better, but they're not Connor Bedard. So why are you pooching half a season, disappointing your fans, disengaging from your fan base to just not try and lose games, but make less of an effort to put out the best lineup possible? I just don't get it. I don't get it at all.
So let me ask you this then. If the fans are disengaged, if this tank-a-thon or whatever is actually happening with these clubs, and the clubs we're thinking about are Chicago, Columbus, Anaheim, San Jose, the bottom 4, bottom 5, whatever it is. And actually right now as we do this, Chicago is the best chance to get the top pick, 25.5%, whatever. Anyway,
that's what's the percentage again? 24.5?
25.5.
1 in 4 chance.
I know.
So
I
you
know.
Cannot win another right. game, finish dead last, and you have a 1 in 4 chance of getting this generational player.
But would you then, say you're a Chicago Blackhawk fan base, would you be happier with them tanking and being disappointed for the next 2.5-3 months, whatever it is, and then be very happy, even if they're not good next season, having Connor Bedard in your lineup in October opening night?
100%. If I was guaranteed that he was going to be in there, if this was the NFL and you knew that you're going to get the top pick overall at the draft, I would have no issue with it. But you have a 1 in 4 chance, and that's a completely different story. Now, if I'm Chicago, I'm trading Taves, I'm trading Kane, I'm bringing assets back to make the team better as a whole. But to actually just target one player and even come up with the slogan, "Whoa, we're taking for Bedard,"
okay? I see what
you're
saying.
That's the part I don't get.
It's a gamble. It's a gamble. And when
it's
you
a
know
big gamble,
and when you know Taves is leaving and Kane is leaving, first of all, let me just tell you that I mean Bedard would look great in any of the 32 uniforms, but he'd look really good in Chicago based on where they're at and based on this kind of run that they've been on for so long with Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane. based on that run. They need somebody. Every team does. But Chicago, I think, really needs somebody like this to regroup, build around, and expand for. But I'm with you. It's the luck of the draw. That's why they're called the draft lottery.
I don't like the way that the NHL runs the draft with the draft lottery and all the rest of it. Okay, let's save that topic for another day because I have a lot to say about that.
I thought we addressed that a few weeks ago. Anyway, Kira.
Yes, yeah. We have promised that we would do it at some point.
Right.
But the way that the draft and the system is currently constructed, it just doesn't make any sense to me to tank because you're guaranteed nothing at all. No Bedard, no nothing. So anyway.
John Tortorella hates the All-Star game.
Yes, he does. Tortorella,
and those aren't the words he used.
No, I have them. Ready?
Oh, you do?
That whole weekend, I don't even watch it. I don't give a poop. But he didn't say poop. I'm choosing to say poop. So, and John Tortorella used to like the All-Star game. He thought it was a fun thing for kids and for families to come out to. So anyways, he's changed his mind. He's entitled to do so. I don't necessarily buy it. I think he's coaching a not great team, and that's why he's not very excited about it. But this is my thing. This is what I can't stand about this. And I think we could probably drop the clink hammer on Torts every week.
Again?
And I actually love the guy. I think he makes the NHL more entertaining, but the stuff he says. So there's an expression when it comes to food. Maybe you have a favorite food, but I don't like that food. Okay. Uh-huh. And it's called don't yuck somebody else's yum. So let's just say you love sushi, but I don't like it. That I don't get to say that sushi is yucky. I get to say I don't like sushi.
Okay.
So he's basically slamming the All-Star game, which is something that a lot of young kids enjoy and other fans enjoy. And I know necessarily not a lot of people and not everybody enjoys it, but other people do like it. You're an NHL coach. How about you just not say anything? How about you say it's not my jam or, you know, I don't want to answer the question. He says that all the time anyway. But mm-hmm. Kevin Hayes was named to the All-Star game. He gave this big emotional speech about how much it means to his family because his brother Jimmy said that he wanted to see him play there someday.
Right.
So this means a ton. And of course, Jimmy passed away tragically from a cocaine fentanyl overdose several years back.
Mm-hmm.
So this means a lot to the Hayes family. And then for John Tortorella to come out and go, I don't even watch it. I don't give a poop. And slamming something that might mean something to others. I just don't understand the point. That's all.
Can I go now? I've been waiting because I think the most angry I got a few weeks back was when I don't know what I was going on. Oh yeah, I know what I was going off on him about. I said he's got to leave. He's got to leave the game. The game is not suited for him. He is not suited for the game. He continues to rip his players. He called them the youth as brains like amoebas. That's what I am paraphrasing, but you get the point with one of the comments. He doesn't care. He cares about the game. But it's different. He has not accepted the way the game is being played. And this whole thing, I'm with you. When you have, even if it wasn't Kevin Hayes and the more personal connection that he has to this upcoming All-Star game with his brother, as you mentioned. Kevin Hayes, say he was even voted in or he was going to go to the All-Star game anyway. Just don't say that stuff. If you're asked the question, what do you think of the game? You're going to watch all this type of stuff. Yes, I am great on Kevin Hayes. Glad he got, glad he's going to go, whatever. But also, he wouldn't say that because remember he scratched him. Remember he sat him a number of weeks ago toward the end of the 2022 calendar year. This guy's not on the same page. He's not on the same page as anybody on the team, and no one on the team is on the same page as him.
Do you hear John his comments Tortorella, after the loss to the Leafs?
Pardon me?
Did you hear his comments after the loss to the Leafs?
I'm tired of it. I'm tired. I'm tired of John Tortorella's comments because what I can't stand in sports, and I'm going to say this, I don't know, I'll just say it. I do not like when any athlete thinks they're bigger than the game. I don't like when any coach or anyone else thinks they're bigger than the game. I think John Tortorella is at the point where he almost thinks he's bigger than the game. He thinks he's better than the game. He thinks he could probably be commissioner and he could run the league and he would make all these changes and only he would be happy. Only he would be happy.
You don't like the arrogance.
I don't like the arrogance. I'm not taking away his success from coaching. From what I gather, a lot of players have liked being coached by him. There's a lot of good things to say about him. I've never been in the dressing room. I've seen him, heard comments, watched them, all that. I just think his time is done. And this is another example of it. Any Flyer fan, young kid, hearing those comments, and they didn't bleep out the comments. They didn't say poop when he actually said those comments.
I know.
Any young hockey fan seeing the coach of the team that this kid, say, loves, has jersey of Kevin Hayes, of jersey of whoever, sees that, what are they going to think?
Wow. It was wildly unnecessary.
Come Absolutely. On. The coach thinks the game, the weekend that I kind of like and say I'm going with my son, whoever, I know I'm extrapolating a lot, but the point is enough's enough. Enough's enough. Tired of it.
Take a deep breath. I like him in the game. I know you and I are going to disagree on this. I like Torts in the NHL because I find him entertaining. I would not want him to be coaching my favorite team right now. How about
but
that?
The entertainment is the okay.
Yes, yes.
But okay.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Got yeah, it. But, yep.
Do you want to quickly mention when a player knows they're offside and?
Oh. So Anaheim played the Sharks the other day. So we're going in a completely different direction now.
Right. And it's worth a mention. It's
Mason McTavish scored what ended up being the game-winning goal for the Anaheim Ducks over the San Jose Sharks. Yeah. And you can see visibly on the ice. First of all, the play looked offside, right? And
yes.
It looked offside.
Yeah.
And everybody watching the game thought it was offside. Mason McTavish thought it was offside. So on the ice, he's going, no, it's not going to count. It's off. It's off. He's saying this to his teammates on the ice. You can read the lips. It's very, very easy to figure it out.
Yeah,
and then, of course, it gets reviewed and they figure it was onside. So the guy who scored the goal thinks the goal is offside or it stemmed from an offside play, I should say. And nope. The league still thinks it, and that's how the game ended, and the San Jose Sharks lost, and Dave Quinn had some words about that, and there you go. So we've slammed the offside rule or how offside has been judged by the league these last few weeks. This was just one more iteration. I don't really care. It's Anaheim and San Jose. The win didn't really mean much to either team. They're not contending. But if this happens in the playoffs, man, in game 7 and the game is decided on something like this, it's going to be tragic and it's going to really suck.
All heck's going to break loose, but good on him. I thought it was funny. I was amusing. I loved it. Good part of the game.
Don't call yourself offside, though. Just future reference. Just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, just kind of do one of those things. 3-on-3. World Juniors. Congrats to Canada. It was a great tournament. Czechia as well. I thought the final four teams were amazing, even the ones that didn't make it in. Every year, the talent level seems to get better and better and better. And I believe next year it's in Sweden. So Canada again are going to try for their third, I guess, in a row because they've won the last two. I cannot stand. I cannot stand. And this is no slight or fault for the players or coaches. I cannot stand 3-on-3 hockey in the medal round, in that gold medal game, to determine a winner.
Really? I love it. I'm kidding. No. I'm kidding.
You shocked me there. Hold on. I thought we did notes before this and you said we're on the same page.
Well, first of all, you and I were texting during this game.
You texted to me, if this goes to OT and ends 3-on-3 in OT, it would
something
like a
Travis. Don't quote me directly. I said some swears. So
no,
don't
I said something like a Travis. You know I don't swear. Come on. Have you ever heard me swear? It would be a travesty. Anyway, here's the thing. Hockey is a team game. Hockey's a team game. And I understand 3-on-3. Okay. NHL, 82 games during the season, they do 3-on-3. If not decided, go to the shootout, as you throw your hand at me. Not because you don't like me. Yeah, humbug. In the playoffs, they go to 5-on-5, and they continue to do that, no shootout. The junior rule is 3-on-3 in the relegation round, 5-minute OT, 3-on-3, all that stuff. They change the rule to be 3-on-3, 20-minute overtime, for example, the gold medal game, without any shootout. So you will go overtime. You'll go at least 20, maybe 20 more. Nothing's going to get a junior at the junior level 3-on-3. It's not going to get to even 8 minutes. There's no chance. But when you are a team game and it's one mistake and you watch that game again, Czechia, they had a 2-on-2 rushback or something like that. The puck just got off the Czechia forward stick. Canada turned it around, and unfortunately, they turned it around to two of the better players. Canada was a great team. 2-on-1, game, set, match. A game like that, you see the emotion on the ice with all that's on the line, even for the bronze medal. It should not be decided 3-on-3. Let these kids play 5-on-5.
Knockout
round.
Call
a penalty. Done. 5-on-5.
There's no 3-on-3 once you're into the knockout round. Absolutely.
Call a penalty 5-on-5 if you have to.
The games are too important. I will concede. If I was debating and we were sitting at a table with the International Hockey Federation, we're figuring out how to do this and they're insisting on 3-on-3, I might be able to be talked into 4-on-4 because 4-on-4 at least happens in the game. here and there. Not all the time, but it does happen.
I think it's still got to be 5-on-5.
I know you do, but yeah. I would accept 4-on-4 ahead of the nonsense that we're watching with 3-on-3 that doesn't resemble the game it's supposed to look the rest of the time.
I had this discussion the other day after the gold medal game, and the person I spoke with said, well, it's entertaining. To which I said, wasn't the 5-on-5 for 60 minutes entertaining? Wasn't that entertaining? I thought it was really good, entertaining hockey. So why change it?
And why accelerate the ending? Because you're not going to have 3-on-3 hockey for 20 minutes. It's just not going to happen.
It's not happening.
So this is a gold medal game. I could have watched a whole other period of hockey in that.
I could have watched two more periods.
Yeah. We used to. Remember, you and I are a little older.
Yeah.
And that's how we used to watch it. So it's, I don't know. It's one of those, it wasn't broke. Why fix it? But everybody's always got a medal.
It's a team game. End of the day, it's a team game. It should not be decided on 3-on-3. Don't get me going on the shootout in soccer. Don't get me going on that one. I could spend a whole 2 hours dropping the you-know-what clean camera on soccer. Anyway,
that's not a bad word. You can say clean camera.
Dropping. Yeah, I was going to think. I was going to say drop something else, but right. I stopped myself. Okay, week to come next. Fix Fantasy 7 as well. Pucks and 7, Ryan Payton, Victoria Madden.
Welcome back to Pucks and 7 with Ryan Payton and Victoria Madiash.
Time flies when you're having fun. We're having fun. Welcome back to Pucks and 7. Ryan Payton, Victoria Madiash. Follow us on Twitter at RyanPayton75, at Victoria Madiash as well. And you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts, Amazon, Spotify, iHeart, Google, Apple. We're also on the SiriusXM app, Stitcher, Pandora. And just Google us and you will find us. Vix Fantasy 7 coming up in just a second. First off, let's go to the week to come in the NHL. Do you want to start on Saturday when you wrote down 14 games for something?
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. That just
I don't like the unbalanced schedule in the NHL. Yeah. I've said that so many times. It's like one day you have 3 games, the next day you have 14. I can't watch 14 games and I want to watch most of them. So give me my 10 game Saturday slate, NHL, please. 9-10 games, we could do that. 14, come on.
It's a Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday league. Seattle, heavy, at least for me, to look at what they're going to do this week. And they're on that road trip. They have been doing extraordinarily well. The last 3 on the road, they've won. They've scored 18 times. They play Montreal tonight, which is Monday. Who's to say that the way Montreal's playing as well, that this team can't put up 5? At least 5. I'm calling it. They're going to put up at least 5 against Montreal. They're going to win. We'll go to Tuesday in a second. But the Kraken on the road, they have a 70% winning percentage on the road,
have a respectable record altogether.
Overall, yeah.
But they have really been something else on the road. I wonder why that is. That always boggles my mind when you're better away than home, especially since they have a pretty invested fan base. I think the Seattle crowd is fun to play in front of, but I still think these things sort of work themselves out they balance out by the end of the year, and I think their home record is going to improve as well. But it's not just Matty Beniers. It's been a group effort from that team, and it needs to be a group effort from that team. Yeah. But we were just joking that they're plus 17 now in plus minus goals differential in the standings, and I think that maybe they made up that plus 17 just in the past week alone, because you got 8-4 win over Ottawa. Yeah. You're 5-1 over the Leafs. Who saw that coming?
Yep.
And 5-2 over Edmonton. So they're making some ground right now. And you're right. They have a schedule coming up on the road that they can do some more damage for sure.
Last year, 11-27-3 away from home. And you talked about, too, the mind-boggling about the whole home record and away record, different teams like that. And it's going to even out. I'll guarantee you one team's records that are not going to even out on the road and at home, the Devils. There's no chance the Devils are going to have a better home record at home when they're done the season than they will away from home. They're 14-2-1 on the road, 11-10-2 at home.
They're pretty much a 500. They're a 500 home team, and they're just bananas on the road. No, it's wild.
Edmonton and the LA Kings, too. You want to look at that one for Monday?
Well, I want to look at that one because this is going to be a really good test for Phoenix Copley. I know both you and I are impressed with what the Los Angeles goaltender has accomplished coming out of the woodwork a little bit this year. He's established himself as a number one in Los Angeles. He's winning games. He's playing really good hockey. Monday night, he faces the best power play in the NHL. And I think I don't know how this one goes. Let me put it to you that way.
And I don't know if he knows either.
No, this is, if he can stop Connor McDavid in that top power play, then I think he goes next level in terms of how we look at him now, because that's going to be a really tough test.
He has been he's been great. I'm not going to go into too many details about what he's done, but he's playing on the wrong team. The only issue is he's playing on the wrong team because
they don't score.
No, but with a name like Phoenix, you have to play to another team that's
closer to. Oh, right. You'd like to see him in the desert, would you?
Just wanted to throw that in there.
He spells it differently.
He does.
He's P-H-E-O, not P-H-O-E.
Not Phoenix. Yeah. But the last few, against Vegas gets a win, against Dallas gets a win, Colorado gets a win, Vegas again. So he did Vegas at home and Vegas away as well, and Calgary too. So he's been playing extraordinary hockey. Tuesday against Seattle. Can Seattle continue the whole road record streak that they're on, and can they just continue to put up points? I think they can. I'm a big Buffalo guy. I'm interested in that one. We talked about Tage Thompson off the top too. I like the way Buffalo is playing also. So this to me is going to be a good one. And then I mentioned the road record of the Devils in Carolina. So who's to say the Devils can't go into Carolina? I know the Canes are tough, but that's intriguing. The road record's great by the Devils. Doesn't matter if they're playing Carolina at home or on the road. When you're taking on one of the best teams in the league, this is going to be a good game to watch.
I think it's going to be a fantastic game. That's my, I always highlight the schedule ahead of the week of what I want to make
that's
sure
on
I
top
don't
of your
miss.
List.
Yeah. And the New Jersey Carolina game, because Carolina, first of all, is pretty banging at home too. I think they have four regulation losses at home. Yeah. Well, they're just good. They're good right on the road and at home. But New Jersey, as you say, is just a different team on the road. So I think that's my pièce de résistance on the schedule for Tuesday.
It sounded pretty nice. Very nice. The Penguins.
We
mentioned too, the Capitals are in a great spot. The Penguins have been in a great spot, but they have to get back.
They have been tanking lately though. Last 2 weeks have been ugly for Pittsburgh. Now I know that they beat the Coyotes over the weekend, and they really did need to beat the Coyotes because before then I think they had lost
five straight. Right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 straight.
Six
I think
in a row?
They lost six straight before then. And if they want to compete in that Metropolitan Division, we talked about Washington earlier, getting the healthy bodies back. And again, you've got Carolina there, and you've got New Jersey who are now winning again. If they want to stay in stride, and they're not right now, they're not in the top four right now, or they're struggling, they need to make some hay, and it has to start against a Vancouver team that could very easily get blown up.
You're saying blown up?
Both.
So they could get blown up
because they could move Bo Horvat and Brock Besser, and they could get blown out because Vancouver has a tendency, if they go down, they go down hard.
Yeah, no, I agree. Pittsburgh for me, I'd love to see that the team gets back. But you mentioned the one about Arizona. Mike Sullivan said, quote, "It's a real important win for us." So it doesn't matter, even if it came against Anaheim, it wouldn't matter. The worst team, Columbus, whatever it is. Chicago, the fact is that they recognize that was a pretty big one.
Winning and losing is habit forming. So when you start to lose a bunch in a row, that's what you continue to do it. Yep. It gets in your head. So you need to snap out of it. It doesn't matter who you're playing. You need to snap out of it and then turn it around and try and get, into the habit of winning instead and go on the upswing.
Nashville, Toronto. We also mentioned about Nashville and how we've been waiting on this team to kind of make a run. Toronto is still there. They're doing what they're doing, and that is winning games for the most part outside of losing some. So they're winning more than they lose. But
do they win when they don't lose?
They win when they don't. This is an amazing team. So what happens is this team of Toronto. They're winning games when they're not losing them.
Got it.
They're winning games when they're not losing. What I meant to say is they're winning games more than they're losing. Anyway, carry on. Talk about whatever Nashville.
But
and
they
town
lost.
Go.
They lost to Seattle. Right. Then they bounced back and they beat up the Flyers pretty badly on the weekend. They needed to do that too. But I just think this is going to be a good game. The Predators are tough. Again, like we said, they've won three straight. As of this point, they've won three straight and they're on the upswing. Saros looks great. I'm looking forward to that game. I think it's going to be a good hockey game.
You win games when you don't lose, and you don't lose when you win. So it's a pretty neat thing. Anyway, do you want to take the rest of this? Dallas, New York. We got the Rangers and Calgary, St. Louis on a Thursday.
Again, the Thursday slate. Dallas, New York is just a good hockey game. I also have my eye on Calgary. The Flames are visiting St. Louis. And these are two teams that should be playing better than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And this week and the next week, we're going to start to see who they really are. Daryl Sutter's comments the other day, it's just like, got to take the young guys by the hand. And they were not prepared for play over the weekend against Chicago. So those are two teams. Somebody's going to win that hockey game. I think it's going to be the Flames. I think the Flames are the better of the two teams, but St. Louis, people are still taking St. Louis seriously enough. So we'll see. One of those teams is going to go in a better direction shortly. I think it's the Flames, and I want to see them play each other on Thursday.
And you know what's interesting is Calgary. It's not like Calgary is having a terrible year. They're in fourth in the Pacific going into Monday. They're 2 points back of Seattle. If the Kraken weren't doing what they've been doing on the road this season, Seattle would not be in the top four, maybe even the top five. And then based on the standings, doing the math, Calgary would be at this point only six back at the Kings. So it's not like they're having a bad season. But the expectation level from what they did a season ago, they're still, as we've mentioned so many times, they're still trying to figure out everybody on that team.
And they're a crummy road team. They're 500 on the road. So they have to fix whatever their road woes are. But you're starting to see Nazem Kadri come on now, though. Just this past couple of weeks, he's looking like the Kadri that we expected from the Colorado and even the Toronto years. That star status is starting to shine a little bit more. And I think that's going to help Calgary a lot.
Dallas, big fan of Dallas. They're playing well, and they're right there as well, certainly at the top of that division. Okay, going ahead to Friday, Winnipeg and Pittsburgh. Again, is it kind of looking at Pittsburgh where they're going to be toward the end of the week? The Winnipeg Jets, we know they're good. They're playing well. They're decent. But this is we talked about a big week for Calgary. This is a big few weeks, I think, for St. Louis based on where they're going to be at the deadline in O'Reilly and Tarasenko. But this is also a big game for Pittsburgh, a big week for Pittsburgh, especially with the way Washington's been playing and how the other teams in that division are playing.
And Winnipeg has been one of the stronger teams in the West. I think it's going to be a tough test. I also like this game on Friday because there's only three games on Friday because, of course, we have to have 14 on Saturday. So I need to watch something, and Winnipeg-Pittsburgh is my favorite NHL on your three-game Friday slate.
Do you want to talk more about that? Okay, next week in the Klinkhammer, we're going to drop it when it comes to
And I know it's hard.
Schedule.
I know scheduling is hard. I get it. But goodness, just a little bit more balance would just be super.
So we won't go through all the 14 games on Saturday. No, just because it'll take about 2 hours. But I will say this. One of them is Edmonton and Vegas. And Edmonton's still in the same situation, I think, as Calgary is. You expect more. You want more. You know it's there, you think. I want to run these stats by you. These are very intriguing. This is the tale of the season for Edmonton. They're consistently inconsistent. So games 1 to 10, the team went 7-3. Games 11 to 20, they went 3-7. Guess what they did in games 21 to 30? If you said 7-3, you're right. Guess
you didn't
what
give
doing?
Me a chance. I guess was about what, to.
Because I like this. Sorry, Vic, guess what they did in games 21 to 30?
7-3, Ryan?
Oh, you're good. Games 31 to 40, they're at 500. So this and the goals for are pretty much the same as the goals against in each 10-game segment. I have no explanation whatsoever, but that is completely, consistently inconsistent.
They need a defenseman. Stuart Skinner is playing well. Jack Campbell, not so much. Stuart Skinner is playing well. They need a defenseman. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, and again, they missed Evander Kane. Huge. It's a huge loss, I think.
But they're going to have him back this year, are they not? I think for the postseason, he's potential, right?
So I assume they will.
Okay. Yeah. But they do. Sunday, they need a defender. They need a defender by the trade deadline big time.
Not a ton of games on Sunday, but Winnipeg is playing again. The Winnipeg Jets, to me, they going into Monday, they've won five in a row. We highlighted them as well already during the week to come on the schedule. But these Jets, they're quiet. I'm not trying to make a pun. They're quiet. They're quietly playing well. And Dallas, I think, is getting more attention. Seattle is even getting a ton of attention. The Washington Capitals are, Carolina. I just think Winnipeg is going about their business. And I admire what they're doing.
Do you think it's a Rick Bonus thing?
I think
I do.
Part of it has to be a Rick Bonus
thing. I do.
Yeah.
And I think he's in there and he's like, we're just gonna do our jobs.
And you know what? For Winnipeg to be at the spot they're at now, I didn't think they were going to be, because the whole offseason was tumultuous for them. Wheeler losing the C, Bonus coming in, all this type of stuff. But they've adapted, and I think they've bought into their role. They bought into his system, and they're a much better team under him than they were at least last season under Paul Maurice.
And they just got Nikolai Ehlers back.
Yeah,
watch out. And that's a huge piece. And Blake Wheeler is healthy again. And he's a huge piece of the top six too. Yeah. So if you look at that top six now, they don't have to play Adam Lowry up there anymore. They've got the big guns back, and they're going to continue to win games. Josh Morrissey is having a career year. The goaltending, Hellebuck is Hellebuck. It's They're gonna be tough to overcome. The more I look at the Central Division, I think it's a Dallas Winnipeg party at the top, the other teams are going to shuffle in there in 3 and 4.
You mentioned Ehlers coming back, and he's part of your Fantasy Seven.
Yes. So my Fantasy Seven is focusing on a lot of veterans who are playing for the first time this season, or at least for the first time since the very beginning of the season. We got Max Pacioretty has made his season debut with Carolina Hurricanes this past week. Guess what? He scored twice. So, and he's available. I can't even believe this still, because I have been hammering on this in my columns all week. He's available in 70% of ESPN.com competition. You guys got to pick him up. He's a goal scorer just for shots alone.
That's very
in your
high.
Fantasy team. Counts shots.
Right.
He doesn't have to score anything. He's a 6-shot-a-night guy. Max Pacioretty has to be up there. He's playing in the top 6 already. You got Nikolai Ehlers back with the Winnipeg Jets. He's available in still too great of a percentage of ESPN.com leagues. You got to pick him up. You got the two guys coming back and making their season debuts, so their healthy season debuts for Washington. Tom Wilson, Nicholas Backstrom. Those are two fantasy. More Tom Wilson than Nicky Backstrom. The Nicky Backstrom.
Why
today,
is that? Why is that?
He scores more. I like Nicky Backstrom for power play assists.
Okay.
If assists are a lot in your league, then sure, Nicky Backstrom's great. Tom Wilson does all of it. And if you count penalty minutes, you have to have that guy in your fantasy roster. We talked about the young kid in Chicago earlier who's getting a shot because Patrick Kane is taking some time off.
Enjoy.
He's relaxing.
He's
relaxing. And that's Lucas Reichel. Lucas Reichel has absolutely lit it up in the AHL. He's going to be a big part of that Chicago team going forward. If you're in a dynasty league or a keeper league, you got to keep your eye on this kid. And when he is playing with Chicago right now, if you play daily fantasy, he's one to watch. Same for Connor Timmins with the Toronto Maple Leafs. But Victoria, you say, he's a healthy scratch sometimes, that Connor Timmins.
Right.
And he is. But when he does play, he scores. He's almost a point per game player from the Toronto blue line this season. And I think he's going to continue to be that guy. So if you play daily fantasy,
that's a risk though, right? Because if you bring him in, then you have to get rid of somebody to maintain the same amount of play.
First of all, it depends on how your league is run.
Okay,
like how many bench spaces you have, how many IR spots you have,
So,
how often you're able to make transactions. Okay?
Okay.
But I like him as a daily play. So if you're putting your daily fantasy team together, he's going to be a cheap off radar asset that a lot of teams aren't going to have. And if he puts up a couple of assists, hey, blocks
easy.
A couple of shots, there you go.
Yep.
We talked about him earlier. To wrap up this edition of Fantasy 7, featuring Victoria Matiash, we have the goaltender we talked about earlier, Phoenix, Phoenix Copley with Los Angeles. I don't like him Monday against the Oilers. I like him in general. I think I'd bench him on Monday.
Bench him Monday.
Connor McDavid on the power play scares me.
Yeah, he scares everybody, all however many goalies they are in the league. But if he does play, it's a big test for him against McDavid. Edmonton's not playing so great, but anytime you face 97, it's a
tough. If you need goaltending help, though, look at the kid in Los Angeles. He's having a good time of it right now.
Been a lot of fun. We're out of time, and we'll do it again next week. You can follow us again on Twitter at RyanPayton75, at Victoria Matiash, and we are available wherever you get your podcasts: Spotify, Amazon, Google, iHeart, Apple, also on the SiriusXM app, Pandora, and Stitcher. And Google us, and you will find us. We always appreciate the listen. On behalf of Victoria, I'm Ryan. Stay well, folks, and we'll talk to you next week.
This has been Pucks in 7, available on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.